The following presentation was recorded at the 2012 Conservative Anabaptist School Board Institute. More information at thedocforlearning.org.
Good morning, brethren.
Good morning.
Blessings in Jesus' name this morning. I'm not sure what to say after what we've just heard. I guess my knees are already shaking somewhat, and I almost feel totally wiped out. And I think maybe Brother Paul ought to just stand right up here and just moderate a discussion. A lot of his ideas, I feel like I'm going to echo again. And I hope that this time will be a time of sharing together. I understood it that way, that it's supposed to be a workshop, not necessarily another lecture. And I hope that we can share it together. I don't know what kind of list of qualifications the committee used to try to decide who to speak, and I believe they chose the least experienced one. That way, all the ones that are experienced will have equal time to speak. So I don't know how many of us there is here this morning. If we each take a turn, we might have a minute and a half, and we'll fill up our time.
Is this C or B?
This is C.
This is the pastor's.
That's right.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Yeah, go ahead. Welcome.
Thank you.
In our school settings, who are the learners?
Should be the teacher and the student.
Very well. How about in this setting this morning? Who are the learners? I've learned a lot already today. I've learned my cup's more than half full already. I'm not sure where we're going to go with all the rest of today, but I think it's important for us to think about it, that I think we each know that. We don't have all the answers, even though we fill a position of leadership. It's not because we have the answers necessarily. And I wanted to start out by thinking a little bit about that. You know, we're going to talk a lot about maybe what should be done or what should not be done. But I thought maybe we should first of all think a little bit about what we should be. I don't think it's by mistake that we are called human beings, not human doings. And that already was alluded to this morning, that it's our inner values that really affect what we do. And I think each of us are called in some capacity. Welcome, brother.
Is it full?
No, there's...
T.C. 3rd. Morning, Paul.
Morning.
Each of us are called in some capacity to represent Christ. Definition for Christians could be little Christ. We are to represent Christ. And we could spend all morning just thinking about how that could be made practical in our lives. Probably all the areas that we talk about maybe could fall under that. How are we Christ's hands and feet in this world? Christ did commission his disciples before he left with a job to do to go into the world, and that commission has come down to us today. I think individually each of us are still given that commission. One of the things that we can do is be prayer warriors. I have found in my own life that sincere prayer for my needs, for the needs of others, greatly affects my attitude towards situations that we face. Taking time to pray can really go a long ways in responding properly. We need to be men of compassion, trying to put ourselves, I think, in other people's shoes in the situations that we face. It will help a lot to try to understand how other individuals view the situations that we're in. Maybe it's someone that it kind of seems like an opponent. Take time to try to understand them and where they're at and why they view things the way they do and what their concerns are. And of course, we need to be men of vision. That came through very well this morning. You know, I thought about this thing of vision, and there's different levels of vision. Parents have vision for their families. Teachers have vision for the school. Board members have vision for school that maybe is a little bit longer, hopefully.
If you need to open that window, if it gets too stuffy in here, just feel free to do so. I want to open this door.
Okay, thank you. Board members and our boards hopefully have a little bit longer vision than what teachers have yet. And as ministry, as pastoral advisors, we should have even a longer vision. I think that is probably, well, we heard this morning, I was placed in our laps, brethren. We have a great responsibility to keep that long-range goal that will give the direction that we're going to get to where we want to go. We have to have that. We have to have that point of reference. I did thought maybe I should ask, how many here this morning served on the school board before you were a minister? Okay. Very good. I did as well. I served on the board for approximately 12 years or so, the majority of that time as a chairman. I feel that it has been a very good preparation for my position as a leader in the church. I value those years. I'm newly ordained, less than three, or right about 3 years. So I'm not sure. That's why I said at the beginning, I'm not sure that I felt qualified necessarily to fill this position because of a lot of experience here. But I do feel the weight of the long-term vision. You see, we have vision for our families, I trust, and where we want our children to be and our grandchildren and our posterity. As leaders, I think we have vision for our congregation. We need that. Well, we also need vision for what I would say like a denominational vision. And again, not because we're going to be arrogant, but we do have something that has been passed to us that the world craves, the world needs, and we're in a unique position to share that, if we will. But even greater than that is the vision for the kingdom of God. Something that I've been contemplating a lot in the last couple of years, that I don't know how many of you know John D. Martin, and this vision is his, and kind of I've thought a lot about it, that, you know, oftentimes in church life and in the Christian life, we kind of feel like salvation is kind of this is the most important thing. Christ came to save us from sin, and that's true, and that's right. But really, it is only the entrance right into the kingdom of God. And really, the longer and vision is the kingdom of God. God is building a kingdom, and you and I have the privilege to be part of that and to enlarge that. It's quite a responsibility. It's not the idea that now I'm a Christian and now I'm just going to pedal along and do what I can until we get there. No, now we're part of something bigger, and it's a vision for the kingdom of God that's going to spread beyond our children and our families and spread to the world. I read an article just this week that troubles me a little bit about it has to do with vision, I think. You know, it's important for us, as we heard this morning, to establish practices, ways of doing things, that I think the culture that's been passed to us is some of this. It's important for us to maintain the faith, but it's also important for us to reach out to the world around us. And the article I read kind of pitted the two to each other, and that troubles me. It was kind of geared that, you know, evangelism is a detriment to the continuation of what we know, and that's not correct. It's not a detriment. And the cry is that when we reach out so many times, we lose out on doctrinal things, and understand that, but that can be a problem, and it has happened in the past, but it doesn't have to be that way. It does not have to be that way. That's another subject. We need to be men who respect authority. And maybe somebody can correct me in this, but in schools, we're here this morning as the topic is pastoral support for boards. My personal feeling is that we are not the authority in the school. If I can explain myself a little bit, in other words, we are here to support a board that has been chosen by the congregation, I trust, to lead our schools. And if we as ministry don't give our support to them in the decisions that they make and back them up, if we preempt their decisions, if we say, no, this isn't right, this is how it's going to be, even though you already decided, we're not respecting authority, and I think we're going to face problems of respect and authority in all levels. And so even I think we're going to remember our role is support for boards. We need to remember that in the school setting, the board does have the authority in the school, and obviously we have an interest in trying to help that the direction of the school and provide direction. It's important, I think, that we are involved as ministry in the school, because school board members change, teachers change, pastoral support can provide a continuity that's important for stability in our schools. Maybe somebody else has some comments to make about this idea of being and what we should be before we get into more practical areas. First Timothy 1:5 says, "Now the end of the commandment is charity out of a pure heart and a good conscience and a faith unfeigned." Unfeigned being something with sincerity without hypocrisy. We are to have this love. It's kind of the people that we should be. So what are the issues? What are some of the issues that you face? What are some of the issues that we face in our schools? What are some of the issues our boards are facing that they come to us for direction?
I think disrespect would be one.
Okay.
For authority.
Now, I have never been a school teacher. Maybe that's another question I thought I should ask. How many have been school teachers? That's good. That's good. How many of you are still school teachers? Well, that's not so good.
That's right.
Maybe I'll get ahead of myself here a little bit, but you know, in Jewish culture in Jesus' day, who were the school teachers? We'll talk about that some more later. Disrespect. What are some other things?
Well, you just addressed one. It's a big long sentence, maybe you don't want to, but if it would be in a discussion about that line between overall direction of the church and giving the school board their rightful place, that's important to me.
And I'll just put rules of authority.
Sometimes in our schools, teachers don't get along with each other.
Okay, so we have interpersonal relationships. That can be a real big one.
Sometimes there are problems with parents not supporting the school.
Okay. Unsupportive parents.
Sometimes the school just isn't funded well enough.
You've answered that one pretty well already. Maybe we need to discuss it some more, though, because that is an issue that we face, definitely.
Sometimes you have board members, one board member just kind of stepping out on the rest of the board members, publicly.
Okay.
So I'm a board member, and I disagree with what the board has to say, then I go among the patron lot. Mm-hmm.
Okay, and unified board. And unified. In other words, they're not presenting as themselves as one voice. Mm-hmm. That the idea you have.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, that's the idea, but I'm really talking about the one individual who goes amongst the patron body.
Seeking support for his ideas, championing his own cause.
It's part of that, but I'd like to zero in on that particular thing just a little bit.
Okay. Discord. Okay, okay. That's a dangerous thing. Scripture says.
To preachers, too.
Right. Scripture says that sowing discord is an abomination. I'm struggling a little bit this morning because the thing that Jonas mentioned there, and that as we talk about situations, we don't want to expose people in negative ways. And I'd like to say that there are some people who have struggles, maybe don't have gifts, maybe it's in the school board, filling a position in the school board, maybe they don't have the gifts, maybe there's teachers who are incompetent somehow. Each of them is still a value in God's sight. Each of them still have ways that can be used in God. That's something that's a burden to me a little bit as we deal with tough situations, that each person continues to feel that they can feel that we value them as individuals, even though there are maybe struggles or there's failures or whatever. That's one thing. So how do we deal with I'm going to say issues with incompetent teachers. Why does that happen? Maybe there's some fence or something that we should be doing instead of having an ambulance in some of these areas, even some of these other areas. Maybe that's some of what our discussion can be. I don't know how many of you.
One question.
Go ahead.
I would really appreciate some input. I don't know how many of you are in communities where you have a variety of churches making up the student body. And how does the sponsoring church deal with unwholesome influences? We need to learn to respect other congregations, even if we disagree with them. When some of those, what I consider unwholesome influences, are brought into the school, what's the proper way as pastors to support the school board in giving direction? Mm-hmm. Can you put that in a word? Or unwholesome influences.
Yeah, that's probably as good as anything.
More than what we're going to get across already, maybe. Something that kind of is similar and yet very different is, I don't know how many of your schools will accept children from non-Mennonite homes, and how do you assimilate them into the classroom? We find that it's a struggle because of a lack of disciplined lifestyle, you know, for those students to fit in somehow. And yet, what is our mission in the world? Can't we reach out and help some people? That's an issue that I thought about. children from other settings. Maybe it kind of can fit in there. And yet, I think there's a little bit different slant here. Maybe that's enough. Let's get started with some of that already. Disrespect. How do we as
pastoral help that? I mean, this can be at all kinds of levels, but I'm not sure who suggested that anymore. Somebody, maybe you want to kind of give us a little direction there.
It can be kind of like a filtering thing. The children reveal it, but it comes from elsewhere. Mm-hmm. That's kind of what I had in mind, parents or pastors. Somewhere there's a culprit. If you have that in school, like I said, the children reveal it, they play it out. It's just...
Children usually don't suck that kind of thing out of their own thumb.
Right, yeah.
It usually comes from unsupportive parents, and it can be a very tough thing. See, some leaders are also parents. How you deal with it when it's the leader's children that come with this disrespect? I faced it as a school board chairman. That's tough. It's tough.
You've been on both sides now. As a pastor, how would you fix that?
That's a part of my struggle with this morning, without trying to... My fellow pastor and I are now a team. We have worked through it. It's been a blessing. It was the hardest thing I did shortly after I was ordained, because this thing was continued, and the school board chairman who took my place faced it, and I knew where he was at, and I knew how hand-tied I felt to speak to someone who I felt was my leader. It's tough, but face it, okay? We need to face it. I thought maybe as we go along, we should talk about cures at the same time. And one of the primary things on the top of the list would be communication. Communicate. Do something. Okay, Brother Lee.
If I'm understanding you right, you approached it after you became equals.
That's correct.
How does your present chairman, who is not an equal in authority, approach his authority with his disrespectful children?
Okay. I think it's the value that in our churches, I'm sure most of our churches at least, we have a plural ministry. I think it's probably good for, and I'm not talking to that group now, but I think I would encourage them to go to another minister and share. I mean, you've got to get relief from it somehow.
But wouldn't it make sense to also think not just about the present disrespectful children, but the roles and define roles? I'm thinking of two individuals, neither of which are in the room here. One of the individuals is a lay brother who is the chairman of the school board, or was at that point. The other was the minister of the church who was the principal of the school. So while on Sunday and in the church setting, the minister is in authority over the lay brother, at the school board meeting, that's reversed. Mm-hmm. And the lay brother said to me from his perspective that it was to him, and I think the word was incredible, I'm not quite sure, but that was the connotation, how well it worked because they had defined the roles ahead of time and had discussed that when it comes to school issues, then, dear brother, you're my authority. And so I think just being aware that there are those very different roles and discussing that ahead of time will be helpful when you then face issues.
Edwin, go.
Yeah, I think maybe more than just define it, we're all different. And I know you can write a lot of things down and still violate them, but I think the brother sitting here in this room is in that situation, and I was in that situation one time. And a number of years ago, we had a new school board chairman. He said he wants to know how this is. So we have a document. I think it's on my computer. I don't know if any, and it's out in my car. I'll get a printer around here somewhere to print it if anyone wants it. But it's been extremely helpful because I hear the school board chairman going back to that at times. And then when you get down here on these other issues of incompetent teachers or interpersonal relationships, there are times when he knows where that's all at, but then he knows that it has become a church issue, and that he'll say, okay, now you minister need to take care of this issue, because now it's starting to go from a church, from a school issue to a membership issue.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that's
been extremely helpful to us. Just. Mm-hmm. For us to keep from running over, some of us sit on the school board, you know, and we can easily, I can't, I don't know about the rest of it, but I can easily get in this mode where, you know, my vision has to come out. So it is still a question to me about that big vision and the overturn of the school board, how that all works, but that document has been extremely helpful to us. Mm-hmm. Of course, you have to follow it, but it gives you something to go back and look at. Mm-hmm. So this is what we decided.
Jeff, you already alluded to this, but one of the biggest things that we can do as pastors seems to me is to work in harmony with our fellow ministers. And if we learn to do that, it sets a precedent, an example for any other authoritative structures that are in place in the school. Anywhere else, if we commit ourselves, that we are going to work in harmony with each other, it'll go a long ways toward working through these situations. Because people who are disrespectful like division, and they like wedges. You know, they like to separate out those who agree with them or who will agree with them.
Misery likes company.
And if they can't do that, they're up against it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I just see that it's very important for me to try to be aware of issues that have a deeper history or consequence or whatever than what maybe the school board even realizes. You know, as leaders, we probably have maybe sometimes information, and we know about some things, and we know maybe what's behind something, and we need to take initiative to go and try to help those situations, to help our boards, to help people see blind spots in their lives and be open to the blind spots in your own life. Mm-hmm. We all have them. Mm-hmm. We all have them. A lot of these things are kind of tied together, aren't they? Mm-hmm. Rules of authority.
One thought that I was thinking of in relation to this idea of who is in charge. Sometimes you could have a parent who comes to the ministry they have the unspoken philosophy that the ministry is above the school board. Okay? Mm-hmm. So they're coming to you, and you can easily, unknowingly or unintentionally, undermine if you're not careful. So I think it's important that we first listen only. Okay. And maybe then investigate and talk to the school committee. Have you dealt with this? Do you have a position on this? Because unknowingly, we can wreck things if we're not careful. Mm-hmm.
Maybe they already got an answer from the school board that they didn't like.
That's the point.
Yeah.
That would be one question to ask. What the school board said when you talk to them?
Don't we do that with our children? Johnny comes and you say, well, what did Mom say? Well, yeah.
I think the same thing can happen also with a teacher perhaps going to the ministry instead of to the board. Mm-hmm. That way the ministers need to be careful about it.
And yet we still need to be sensitive to if there is a conflict there between the two, that we're mediators, can be there and be mediators. And not to take sides. You know, it's... But it might be an issue you feel very strongly about. And it's pretty easy then to say, yeah, brother, it rings a bell here, you know. Careful. You're going to... Then we become guilty of the discord.
Well, how many times have you said, I'm sure you've all experienced this, but you've heard out a story and it looks so clear to you, and then you go to the other side and your perspective changes. And so it's important that we wait and listen out and discern properly.
Hear both sides. Again, it's important to try to put ourselves in the shoes on both sides.
Maybe all three sides.
It's like Proverbs says, it is folly and shame to him who answers the matter before he hears it. And we've been just really challenged and encouraged to collect information before you make a decision. And that goes for church life too. Obviously, I mean, we know that, but it also works for school issues.
I guess I got a question. What role does the ministry have as far as, like you mentioned, the ministry sometimes knows more than what the laity does, and yet the laity are the ones that vote on the school board members. If there's a school board member that is chosen and the ministry knows something that maybe they aren't supportive for other areas, what, as a ministry, how far does our authority go? Do we have the authority to disqualify him from the board, or is there an easy way of...
I'd be real slow. In my experience, I only see face value sometimes. And it's been my experience that sometimes when somebody actually is given a responsibility, they actually turn out... totally different than what they respond, totally different than what you thought they would. When the responsibility, when they feel the weight of it and it comes on their shoulder, they'll stand up and go. And if you don't give them that opportunity, I don't know, where is the balance between prevention and cure?
Well, that would be the ambulance approach to disqualify someone after they're elected. The fence approach would be for the ministry to nominate the people that are voted on.
Okay.
I'm going to say something here. That's the way we do it. I don't know if that's the right way or not, but I'm going to go deeper than that yet. In our church life, we've taken a position, and I don't know how well we've done, but we've tried to do it, and that is we want to deal with the issues, okay? If a brother is in communing fellowship, then he may be used in any. So you see, brother, if we don't think, well, that wouldn't always be true, because there would be qualities that wouldn't. But there's a sense where if we're really afraid of this brother, we need to be dealing on a much broader level even before that yet.
Mm-hmm.
If you really think it's... And if his organizational skills and so forth are wrong, I think there's probably other brethren in the church that will probably sense that too. Mm-hmm. Does that make any sense to you?
Yeah, it does.
So if we're really afraid of his values, like we already heard this morning, then we have a responsibility before that, rather than to cut it off after...
We got to be really careful with our personal perception of ability, because I'm convinced that the most important quality for any Christian worker is a willingness.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't called to the ministry because I have leadership training or because I have natural leadership abilities, I don't think. But I want to serve the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
And there's brethren, I see that in our congregation. And again, too, I think one of the things I'd be almost scared of, I guess, if there's too much control as far as nominating a slate, that the ministry nominates a slate to be chosen from, that we aren't choosing all people, that the board isn't made up of all individuals that are similar and alike. Because it really works best if there's a mix of personalities and a mix of abilities, and the person that maybe doesn't have organizational skills maybe has more vision. Just things like that. That makes sense?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying you're doing it wrong, Brother John. I just think, for me, I'm not sure if I'd feel comfortable there exactly. I'd want to be very careful at least.
Well, I agree. We should evaluate those things when we nominate them.
But, you know, we grow mostly by given responsibility. At least I find that in my life. If I'm left to sit, I'm not growing. I'm not challenged, okay? And sometimes what a young brother needs is to get in there and start feeling some weight and be challenged, and he'll develop.
So what would you do, though, if he started to take your church role? A brother told me when I was ordained first, he said, "Brother, the school teachers and the school board are going to have more influence on the direction of this church than you as a pastor did." I still believe that. I argued with that at least 3 years of my life because I didn't want that to be true, but I still think it's really true. So what would you do, Jeff?
Are you going to be the only one that sees it?
I'm just asking a question.
Okay.
I think there's something that the Bible would give us some, at least, instruction in a broad sense here. And it may address all the different approaches to this. But this is a question I have, and I've wrestled with this for many years. This comment that if someone is of communicable status, does that mean they are open for any and all positions in the church? Mm-hmm. Would that qualify for an ordination? And if not, this is the point I'm asking, would God give us some direction in this whole question, not narrow but broad, that we could extract from this his heart for these issues? I think the brother here made an astute comment. I never heard that before. I don't know if I would agree with it wholeheartedly, but they have a lot of impact mm-hmm. on the direction of the church. We've seen it in our home community. Devastating. Mm-hmm. But we've also seen the change when this was arrested, and it brought a lot of suspicion on the pastors because of the role we took in changing it. We had a lot of turmoil for a few years. But this is the question. Does God reveal his will for us in a broad sense by the idea of having given us directives? You know, we say that every brother in the church should be qualified for the pastoral role, but that's not true. If that's true, why would God even have gone through the... why would he have given us this? It's obvious that not every brother is at the same place, maturity level and so forth. So I think this can... I really have been benefited from hearing both sides here. It tells us that God will honor a variety of ways when his will is sought. But I'm of the persuasion that maybe what we have lacked in what Brother Paul shared is the ministry has become a little more remote in their role in giving oversight to the work of the school. Maybe we have lost the vision that the church, the school is really part and parcel of the church. And maybe some of you are a part of communities where you have a patron school and it's not that way. But probably most of us are not there. Mm-hmm. I think I would urge us to get back to understanding that this school is really an extension of this brotherhood mm-hmm. and should reflect it and the values the church has.
It's the future.
Since I might not be able to bear testimony to this in 5 years or so, I'm going to bear testimony of it now. And it's just what I saw happen. When we had a school board chairman that asked us to define those roles so that we know, so that the deacon brother sitting behind me here is now principal of the school at our school, but he's also deacon. And he has to learn how to wear those two hats. And when we defined that out, something extremely interesting happened. Mm-hmm. And what you think might be unsupportive parents see, and suddenly the school board doesn't know it now, the current school board, but we worked for years where we'd get about this time of the year and we'd be in debt in the school and we would hope for the summer funds to bring it up. Something extremely interesting has happened. When that began to work real well, the school board we have now has funds. Now. All I'm saying is that these things are all... And so I just want to bear testimony to that because I watched, not because of what I did, but a strong school board chairman that asked for those things to be defined, and then he runs a tight ship there. I mean, and where it is his responsibility, he'll tell me so. And that's okay. And then he sees that it's edging over into ministerial role because of what the brother said up here. Maybe there's confidential issues, maybe there's a whole bunch of issues. I'd just like to encourage us on that. It really does work, and a lot of these things start to... We're not without problems, don't get me wrong. But it's a blessing right now, so I just want to bear testimony. Mm-hmm.
I hope that you'll make that available for us.
Because people that... Well, it's still about hearts, but people that... See, supportive parents, they like good authority. They really do. They won't tell you so, but when they see it working, they... It all works together. I don't know how to...
What's your definition of good authority, brother?
Well, when we respect each other's roles. There are some Jezebels in the world. But generally speaking, people don't work well whenever I don't work well, or whenever Jeff don't work well, or you don't work well, Jeff, John, from the top down. Does that make any sense to you? Mm-hmm. That's all I'm trying to say. There are some Jezebels, I know. But most people are not. Most people are reacting to.
Let me ask one more question in this whole thing. Would it be out of order to think this way, that the best system, and the brother is defining one that's worked well for them, is still within the bounds of an ultimate accountability we will give for what happens in the brotherhood? If my observation is correct, that the school is a part and really is an extension of the church, does that not mean Hebrews 13 will apply? And if it does, does that not mean that in the best of defined orders and roles, there's still this good understanding that pastors still are responsible for what happens in the school? Am I out of order? Am I correct in my thinking?
Yeah, I think we are. We're called to that.
If that's the case, as good as structure and roles can be defined, it should never be with this understanding that it leaves the pastors without any accountability. And if that's true, that must also insist that they do have responsibility and authority. Mm-hmm. However that's worked out.
Maybe there's a difference here in roles. I see the pastors as being the umbrella in policy setting, but when it comes to the nuts and bolts,
yes,
the mechanics of running the school, then we need to empower the school board.
Amen.
To follow from that point on. There's a shift here, I think, in that isn't true in every situation.
It's good to know what we don't know.
I think there's also a difference between choosing paint colors and dealing with issues that affect the church. In other words, there's a lot of technical choices to make that should be left to someone else.
Mm-hmm.
But the overall direction of the church is still our responsibility.
Yeah.
And the school.
Yeah, it's still our responsibility to maintain that long vision. And it's easy when we get bogged down in what I will call molehill syndrome, where we got this issue and everybody's focusing on it and it becomes a mountain. And we need to... You said, brother, sometimes we're too much aloof, and yet sometimes we need to be far enough that we can see how insignificant or insignificant this issue is in relation to a long-term vision. Sometimes we get bogged down. Well, I hope this will be an ongoing discussion. I'm sure we still maybe didn't answer all the questions, but let's look a little bit at some of these unwholesome influences in the school and what is our responsibility there. Some comments, some thoughts on that? How do you keep a handle on it? We have that in our location. Our school has grown. A few years ago, we were in this church basement. Our school was outgrew the church basement. We were able to purchase a property next door and renovate it for school. We thought we were good for 10 years. 4 years later, we don't have room. We add a modular to the side, we're full again. Some of that came about because other churches in the area closed their schools and families came to us from other church groups. similar church groups, but you know, for various reasons, their schools closed, and so we found ourselves providing education. And I'd say as many as almost a third of our students aren't from our local congregation. And this is a very pertinent issue.
And I have some more questions on that, because my personal persuasion is that the biblical precedent is that we protect the young and then grow into maturity. And in the settings in which I find a reverse of that. And it doesn't, I'm not against bringing these children in, but I'm asking a serious question. Because my persuasion is that the schoolmaster brings people to Christ, and then the mature Christians would be protected. But I think, and our churches at least, as I look over the landscape, what I see happening is we think that we can bring these influences in, and then we protect the adults in church setting. And to me, that seems biblically incorrect, and yet I want to bring these children in. That's the question I have. Does that make any sense to you?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, okay, this just happened to me, so this is fresh on my mind. Okay, we wanted to bring in a particular speaker, some people did, and we said, we don't want to go there. Well, we have students from that church. Do you see my dilemma? See, to me, that seems backward. And I said, I don't know what to do about that.
Somebody have some words of wisdom? I'll just say a little bit as far as we decided that the school is our church school, that we would maintain the responsibility of policy. We talked about, should we allow board members from the other congregation that so heavily support the school? And we kind of decided that's not wise. We get conflict of interest. We accept them as brethren, you know. But sometimes our, even between congregations, even in the same fellowship, maybe we have a little bit different vision and that kind of thing. So I think it's, in our case, we kind of decided that it's going to stay local. There's a difference too between children from other church settings and children from community, too. Maybe you don't face. Okay. One of the other congregation in our area who largely supports our school, or one of them, they have a children's club program in the local town. They have every Tuesday night they get the children from town together, and they had a young girl that showed real interest in spiritual things. Parents aren't Christian even. I don't think she even professed to be Christian. But they had a concern for their daughter going to public school. They had some moral values. And so we were asked whether we would accept this girl into our school. Do we, don't we? Do we bend rules to allow? We had a stipulation that children that attend our school were not to have influence of TV in the home. And we made an exception for that, for that student. The student is no longer in our school because we had some discipline things that we were addressing. It wasn't only her, it was some school-wide things that we were trying to get a handle on, discipline issues. And because I, from my viewpoint, because of her, the undisciplined lifestyle that she comes from, she couldn't handle it. Her parents ended up pulling her out because of it. There's still mixed feelings about all that. There's still tremors in our congregation about that. Did we make a mistake?
How active was the pastors and was the pastoral team in making some of those decisions? Did you trust the school board? Did you entrust those decisions primarily to the school board?
We would have been involved in it. Yeah, as when there's a school board meeting, if there's going to be decisions made, it's our handbook says that two ministers should be present at the meeting. In that way, we know what's happening. And again, it's I think it's good that we be sensitive to divide between the issues that we talked about, whether this is a technical thing or whether this really affects the direction of church as to how much voice or weight we put into a decision. But we're there. I mean, I have a voting capacity on the school board as a pastoral advisor.
Okay. I guess I have some pretty strong feelings about some of that.
Okay.
I've got into some discussions where people disagree with me. I don't feel like our children are missionaries, and that I need to protect my children when someone else does here. And my school is part of my way of doing that. As much as my heart goes out to a child that desires something more, maybe then we can stretch ourselves and do some tutoring or working with them one-on-one. But if I bring someone in from a worldly setting into my school setting and expect my children to be unaffected by that, I think I'm fooling myself. So that's been kind of my opinion about that.
We were go ahead.
One of the communities that we get into with the COE operates two schools. One for community children, one for church children.
Hmm. How does the community view that?
I don't know.
If you had that decision to make again today, how would you do it? About allowing that girl to come to your school?
I'm not sure, because it was not an issue that I feel like she caused bad influence in the school because of her home life. But at the same time, I don't feel like we really were able to help her either, because of it's a different culture. And I don't know. Lee?
Well, we had this discussion in our own school not real long ago. And I'll just give you a little bit of that illustration. This child that was to be brought in, supposedly, had some real moral issues. And I don't know, but see, I think that as a father, it's my responsibility to protect my children at home. And we would limit neighbor children's interaction. Mm-hmm. And I think that is pastors. We're responsible to protect our children in the church community as well. Mm-hmm. In that particular situation, I'll be honest with you, I jumped up and down hands and feet on that one. No.
Okay, now in the situation that I'm speaking about in our community, the fellow who is the administrator of the club, the children's club thing there, he came from that very setting. And he says that the reason that he is in the church today is because somebody was willing to accept him in and give him training that he didn't have at home. And now he is a member in the church, very active in reaching out to the community. And that's the other side of it. And he, you know, without somebody being willing to open that door for him, where would he be? Okay, we're running out of time. I have something here I'd like to share yet. How many of you have heard of the book Three Cups of Tea? All right, there's a fellow by the name of Greg Mortensen, if I'm saying his name right, and he is not religious at all. In fact, he will go to lengths to make sure he understands that he's not religious, because he works in Muslim countries building schools for primarily for girls, because he has this idea that promoting education to women in some of these restrictive countries will raise their level their level of living. But there, he has some things that are kind of interesting to me. Talking about relationships and how we're going to work together, it's important that we take time to build relationships. And he said he learned this from his friends in the Muslim country. There was a man, he actually got involved in this because he was a mountain climber and he lost his way on the way back down off the mountain. And he was, his life was saved virtually by some of these local people who lived in the mountains there who were Muslim. And they took him in and he was very grateful to them for what they had done in saving his life. Anyway, this one man, which I think was the home that he had stayed in while he was recuperating from having been lost as, and almost lost his life. This man's name was Haja Ali. And he said that the first cup of tea you share with us, you are a stranger. The second cup, you're a friend, but with the third cup, you become family. And for our families, we are willing to do anything, even die. And in that culture, it's very important that they sit down, you visit, you learn to know each other, and before, you know, and it, you develop a friendship. Time is up. I'll just make this real quick. He says, okay, we need to build relationship, right? And we need to, what I wanted to get to is to build bridges. To build bridges, okay? The bridge builder. An old man going on a lone highway came at the evening, cold and gray, to a chasm vast and deep and wide, through which was flowing a sullen tide. The old man crossed in the twilight dim, to sullen stream had no fears for him, but he turned when safe on the other side, and built a bridge to span the tide. Old man, said a fellow pilgrim near, you're wasting your energy with building here. Your journey will end with the ending day. You never again must pass this way. You have crossed the chasm deep and wide. Why build you the bridge at the evening tide? The builder lifted his old head, his old gray head. Good friend, in the path I've come, he said. There followeth after me today a youth whose feet must pass this way. This chasm that has been naught to me, that to that fair-haired youth may a pitfall be. He too must cross in the twilight dim. Good friend, I'm building the bridge for him. I think that's part of the responsibility that we have as leaders. And we're not without help. As a father and a leader, one of my favorite verses is from Isaiah 40 and verse 11, where God says, where it says about God, that he will feed his flock like a shepherd. He shall gather the lambs in his arm and carry them in his bosom and shall gently lead those that are with young. So just leave that encouragement with you as you face issues. Don't give up. And don't stop talking. We have another whole day plus to talk to each other, so God bless you.
For more free resources that support teaching and learning, visit thedocforlearning.org.